Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. My name is Mike Kravchenko, and I'm joined today by John Nucci, our man for all things golf at Conduct. Hey, John, how are you? How
are
you feeling?
I'm good. How are you? I'm as good as I can be after watching my Giants on Sunday night, but that's okay. I'm doing all right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bittersweet for myself. Apologies if my voice is actually rough. I mean, the Jets had my vocal cords gone by like 7:50 during the intros.
It was a great three plays for you.
Yeah, 75 seconds for him, and then I was at the game, so it was a really enjoyable game to be at, and at least seeing that was a good walk off. Like it was a good game. Can't totally complain, but. We'll see what happens the rest
Speaking
of the game.
Speaking of golf, by the way, you mentioned I played 108 holes of golf this weekend for charity. Mm-hmm. So I played three rounds of 18 on Saturday and three rounds of 18 on Sunday. So my treat at the end of that was getting to watch the Giants get absolutely just blown out on Sunday night. That was terrific. That was a lot of fun.
Are you feeling sore? Like, how are you feeling after that?
To be honest, like Sunday night, Saturday night and Sunday night, I was brutally sore. Sunday morning was my worst round, I think, because I was still so sore. I shot an 88 Sunday morning, and then it progressively got better. I felt fine while I was out there, but it was like 10 minutes after I got in my car, I stiffened up, and it was tough. But I feel actually fine today. I'm playing again tomorrow, playing again this weekend, so we're good. We're good to go. Show goes on.
Yeah. You're a trooper. I mean, maybe you should be playing football. That's crazy. Football is back, though, and so is Chris Jones. So I do want to transition a little bit into that and talk about the Kansas City Star defensive tackle. He finally signed a one-year contract after holding out for training camp basically this entire time up until he even sat week one. So I'd love to talk about that, kind of get your thoughts on how you feel about the situation of him actually being at the game. So $19.5 million base salary he was set to make. He felt that that wasn't enough. He wanted to be more paid and Aaron Donald territory. So Aaron Donald makes about a little over 31.6 per year. So, he feels Chris Jones that at a younger, at his age, he believes that he's in the Aaron Donald territory now. And the Chiefs were slightly off, of that number. So he definitely wanted to get something. He sat out all of training camp and incurred about $5 million total in fines when it comes to his game check that he missed as well. So my big thing, is just the going there. I want to get your opinion on just, as a sports fan or as, maybe even, someone that has played sports in the past, just sitting there and kind of watching your team. He was kind of, sitting there like an evil villain almost. He had his two agents next to him. He was eating the popcorn and, watching them lose a game, too, on national television.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting dynamic sitting up there. I mean, curious to know how his teammates feel about something like that, too.
Right.
Him sitting up there watching them, not to mention they already have, not that he would have known this, but, they lost Kelsey. He wasn't playing. So they were going to be in for it to begin with. And then to have one of your best players up in the box or wherever, I don't know if he was in the box. I think he was up there in the box with his, with his agents watching over Sting at WrestleMania or whatever that was. It was an interesting dynamic. It was powerful to see him sitting there. I imagine there was some sort of Jerry Maguire, Rod Tidwell type of situation where his agent, approached the Chiefs after the game and reminding them they're going to have to pay all this money because his new deal came pretty shortly after that game ended. Maybe it worked. I don't know. Maybe that forced their hand a little bit.
That was what I thought too. Yeah. Maybe even during or after or before, whenever the game, that was their time to have their meeting. It came out. Yeah. I mean, obviously the deal, it's very heavily incentive based. I mean, obviously he has his base salary, but to get up to the 25 number that he wants to get closer to Aaron Donald, I mean, he has to, and some of it is pretty, doable. I mean, it's 1 million and it's basically 2 million for playing half the season. If he gets his 10 sacks, which is going to be a little tough, I mean, to be honest, that's, getting double digit sacks while not being in training camp and being in the preseason or, it's.
Yeah. I mean, it's doable as far as the playing time, unless do they play any games at MetLife this year? Because you're always on me. There's a pretty high likelihood he might just get injured, and then
yes, there's actually a primetime game at MetLife. So that is, yeah, that's something to look out for. That is, yeah, that, I'm sure that's a topic that we'll end up covering in the future. You know, once some lawsuits are going to come out. I mean, the entire league is complaining about MetLife turf. So
you think Rogers is about to file a lawsuit against MetLife?
I don't know. I can't. Don't even get me. I could sit on here for 30 minutes just talking about that. But
yeah, I saw it was so the incentives. It was $1 million for 35% playing time, $1 million for 50% playing time, which is in addition to that 35. $500,000 if he gets 15 sacks, and then a couple of them that seem, I guess, sort of attainable. $1 million if he makes first team All Pro and the Chiefs make the Super Bowl. $2 million if he's Defensive Player of the Year and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. Those, you know, are like one of my 13-team parlays that I construct every week and never win. So those might be a little tougher to hit, but yeah, as you said, as long as he doesn't get hurt, some of these he's probably in for at least another $2-3 million in incentives.
That's a perfect. That is exactly how some of those are. Yeah, I mean, the big thing also about the deal that I thought was maybe the most significant, at least on the Chiefs side, especially, is the being able to franchise tag him. You know, that's ensuring that they have leverage over that, over him, you know, over the next year, at least in negotiations. And the big thing that I think is beneficial for both sides is that the tag number is way more than what the, you know, the cat, you know, the number that it would be this year. So he has $32.4 million he would be due on a tag next year. So that's more than the Aaron Donald number. So, you know, that's really, I think it's almost viewing this year as almost like a bridge deal to get to maybe that number, or if they could sign a longer extension. I know it came out today as of recording on September 12th that he is open to an extension. So, you know, it's, I'm sure throughout the year, depending on how that goes, that's probably the direction that it would go. But players are looking for a lot of money now, and they're holding their teams a little hostage. I mean, Joe Burrow just signed a massive deal. You know, how do you feel about that? I mean, what happened to the hometown discount?
Yeah, I mean, it's a $275 million extension. I think there was 219 guaranteed. And you certainly can't say that NFL teams, small markets, they can't play that card much longer. Because Cincinnati, not the biggest market in the world, and they are, you know, shelling out record-breaking contracts with $200 million guaranteed money, and the NFL is just printing money right now. I don't know if you also saw a small little side note here, but they're talking about potentially putting a franchise in Europe, and then eventually like a whole division, which I imagine was the long-term play regardless. But sorry, getting back to the actual Burrow thing here. I think what it does here is it goes to show you that the value really that a player can bring to their team and the franchise beyond just the on-the-field play. And there's very few guys, and you got to have big personalities and, you know, a big personality to be able to command something like that. See someone like Messi with the equity and the profit sharing. He can demand it because of what he brings to the club outside of that with celebrities at games and social media, you know, exploding, the whole U.S. talking about it. Burrow's not obviously the same level as Messi, but he is a big draw, and he's become hugely popular, a popular name for the Bengals, and he's also produced. He's in the top five last year in pass yards, completions, completion percentage, touchdowns, so sixth in passer rating. He's you know, putting his money where his mouth is. It's quite a bit of money. Can't fit it all. But he's walking the walk and he's talking the talk here. So,
yeah, that's the big thing. I mean, he got guaranteed 146.5 at signing, 219 total. And like you mentioned, I mean, per year he's probably generating that for the Bengals. I mean, he's bringing them to AFC Championship games. They're collecting a lot more, you know, ticket revenue. Just the overall, you know, effect, the Burrow effect that he's, you know, brought to Cincy, and yeah, just the media that they've garnered over the last few years. I mean, for me growing up, obviously Cincinnati was great with, you know, the Chad Johnson / Ocho Cinco days, but you know, besides that, they've kind of been, you know, a little bit on the lower end, kind of not as much maybe the Browns and Jets, but you know, feeling like that. So he's really elevated that whole team. So not surprised to see a giant deal like this, but slightly just because of the kind of attitude that they had towards it before actually negotiating, or what they at least showed the public, you know, with how they felt.
Yeah, and I mean, historically, Cincinnati hasn't really been that relevant. Like, the earliest I can remember was Carson Palmer, and they were decent, but they were, you know, never great. And I think before that, they were, like, historically bad for a really long time. So, obviously, you get somebody like Burrow, who, as you said, is a hometown guy. He sells tickets, and he performs on the field. So, I think if there's any player that deserves this type of contract that brings the you know, performance on the field combined with what he brings to the franchise, it's probably someone like Joe Burrow. So
no, absolutely. It's pretty crazy. Football is pretty crazy.
Oh, it just dominates. It dominates. Football dominates. It's the reason, and we'll talk about this in a minute, I imagine, but it's the reason that they forced, you know, this ESPN charter deal to actually go through. So
before we get into our next topic, where, you know, you mentioned obviously the ESPN stuff, I do want to, you know, have a message from our platform, Spotify. So football is, I mean, king. ESPN had to get a deal done. I mean, I know there was a lot of controversy this past weekend when it came to ESPN and being able to actually watch games. So, you know, John, can you go a little bit into the charter deal that they reached recently?
Yeah, so I'll give you a little bit of a background, kind of how this works, because I didn't fully understand it till last week. But cable companies pay broadcast cable companies, so someone like Charter that owns Spectrum, they pay broadcasters, which is Disney, ESPN. They pay them a carriage fee, and that fee is for the right to air their programming. So prior to this new deal, Charter was paying $2.2 billion to ESPN for the right to air Disney's programming. So that's ESPN, that's ABC, that's a handful of others, National Geographic. Those broadcasters, in turn, are really relying on that money, like ESPN's relying on that money, because they have to pay leagues like the NFL, the NBA, for the right to air those games. So dispute centered around, it wasn't so much the actual carriage fees. It was partially that, but I think Charter dug in a little bit more here because they were concerned about direct-to-consumer programming, which is short for just, it's ESPN Plus and streaming services. They were saying that essentially Disney and ESPN Plus was offering all these exclusive services while simultaneously trying to raise their carriage fees, and it just didn't make much financial sense for them anymore. So Disney pulled all of its stations from Spectrum TV as of, I think it was August 31st. It affected the first weekend of college football. It affected the U.S. Open coverage. But as we talked about, NFL is king, and first Monday Night Football game of the season with the new look Jets and the Super Bowl contending. Well, I guess they're both Super Bowl contending teams.
That's what I like to hear.
I think both sides were pretty pressed to get a deal done. So they came to the table again, and it seems like both sides kind of gave a little bit on this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people see this, maybe they're scrolling and they're like, oh, they signed a deal, but they don't understand the implication of it. Like, it's like about 15 million customers didn't get to see, you know, plus,
yeah,
I mean, you know, my girlfriend's from Alabama, she's an Alabama alumni, like, they, I mean, that's all that matters is college football, and the fact that some people were not able to view that is, you know, it's devastating. You know, it's the first real weekend. It's a big, big game. You know, not being able to provide for that was a huge deal. And like you mentioned, obviously, I am curious though, like everyone is pushing that, saying that it is, you know, the Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets, but NFL is the power there. You know, I would say, whether it was the Lions and Chiefs playing on Monday night or the Jets and Bills, I feel that the NFL would have been able to get a deal done because of the NFL.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure there are some sort of you know, brokering done there, but yeah, it's interesting. Charter was essentially saying that the rising carriage fees are forcing them to increase prices, and then it's forcing consumers to leave, and then ESPN's offering content to consumers, which cannibalizes it. So under the new deal, Spectrum, I'm using Spectrum and Charter interchangeably, but Spectrum customers, they'll get access to all those Disney streaming services. So Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN at no extra cost. That's depending on what their subscription tier is. Spectrum customers will, I guess ESPN is in the middle of launching or about to launch a direct-to-consumer, a different type of streaming service. So Spectrum customers will get that as well. Jimmy Pitaro, the president of ESPN, he positioned this as a way to help the service get established and get more access to advertisers. What do you think? Do you buy that argument that this is a way to get access to advertisers, or do you think their backs were just kind of up against the wall and they were going to lose billions in carriage fees? I mean, I don't know the answer, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more billions in carriage fees. I mean, I can't see that being the number one in terms of the money make. Like, it's not billions, you know? Like, it's significant parts of deals, but it's not usually not the only part of deals, of those type of, you know, media rights deals. And a lot of times it's not in the 2.2 billion range that, you know, that they were being put in jeopardy.
Yeah, and the carriage fee did ultimately increase on this deal. And the carriage fee increased. Charter's getting the right to offer those streaming services that they were concerned were taking away all its customers. So both sides kind of blinked here. It's only 19. I think there were 27 previous Disney channels that Spectrum offered. It's only 19 now, so... we're losing Baby TV, it looks like, which is a huge loss for everyone involved. It's Baby TV, Disney Junior, Nat Geo Wild. I feel like I did watch some Nat Geo Wild content at some point. I usually, like, I'll turn it off like immediately before the lion catches the elk. I can't watch that part of it, but like I want to watch the chase. You know what I mean? But we're losing those channels. But ultimately, like I said, I think both sides kind of caved here a little bit. I don't know. What do you think this says for streaming services? I feel like it signals that Disney maybe is not totally confident that streaming is ready to stand on its own. They had people like Stephen A. Smith and their other personalities out there, telling people to cut the cord and go to ESPN, and they were trying to leverage it, but ultimately they blinked. So obviously streaming is the future, but I guess it's not there yet. What do you think?
That's the big thing is yet. And like you said, I don't think Disney's confident in their readiness to even do streaming. As I know that the ESPN Plus, you know, like you mentioned, they're coming out with a new streaming service because ESPN Plus has such horrible ratings. Like people have been given it such negative reviews. It's, you know, it doesn't work a lot of the times. A lot of times setting it up with your provider doesn't go well. So I think that they're aware also of the fact that a lot of the spenders in the United States are not of that age range yet. So I think the people that are adopting streaming are not the largest spenders and are the ones of the households yet. So I think it's all relative, you know, to the economy as well, like with housing market, like people, at least, you know, I'm 24, I'm not buying a house anytime soon, just the reality of it. So when it comes to buying cable or streaming, by the time I'm buying a house, my household will probably be fully streaming. So I do think a lot of it is related to that. It's just not ready yet. I think once the new generation comes in, once they also figure out their streaming, I've been watching Pat McAfee since he's been over there, and it seems like they're even having just trouble having his stream. You know, they've been running their stream very well for the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, McAfee show. And, you know, now you look at the cameras, AJ Hawk's a little off, the microphones are off. So it's the streaming, I think, at ESPN, maybe they're not as confident in, and they're, you know, kind of work. It seems like that's a priority for them, though, the way that they are moving. So, yeah, I think that's really the big thing is the readiness. And I think streaming, though, like you mentioned, is the long-term play. And I'm curious to how those deals, you know, those contracts are going to end up working out when it comes to media rights, when it comes to, showing any games. Because it is a little bit different when it comes to just the technology capabilities. So,
yeah, it's interesting you say that. I have ESPN Plus. I actually love it. I don't know. I
have never had any negative myself.
The only issue I have is that it does ask me to log in to the provider like all the time. You know, like every 3 days I have to log on to the website to do it. But otherwise, I mean, I enjoy it. I'm not, you know, ESPN's not a sponsor here. So I don't mean to plug them like this much, but I love ESPN. It's a very well worth the money as far as I'm concerned. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, ESPN worldwide leader, you know, whatever, that's the thing too. Like the content that they have is always going to be unmatched. So, no matter what, it's going to be that. So like you were mentioning, I mean, streaming, people now, I want to, as a fun kind of way to also talk about football, the ACC and ESPN also just reached a deal with Theater Sports Network. So while we were talking about streaming, now people are going to be able to also watch games at their local movie theaters. About 75 games are going to be shown in theaters in addition to New Year's Six Bowl games and the College Football Playoff National Championship game too. So, you know, this is a significant thing. I mean, obviously, movie theaters are in a little bit of a crunch, so I think this is another new way to kind of build that up, but also build, I mean, college football fans, I mean, we were mentioning earlier in the episode, now, MetLife Stadium was bonkers yesterday, but there's nothing like a college football game. I, you know, obviously growing up in New York, you don't see that as much. I went down to South Carolina. I've been to one serious college football game, South Carolina-Auburn, a couple years ago. I mean, it was an atmosphere I've never experienced. Like, I mean, there were parents that were screaming at 18-year-olds on the field, you know, like, I mean, it's just, you know, a mom and a dad, you know, it's just, it was cool. It was a cool experience. So
we're going to get you to a Penn State game soon. Well, I just went, I was at the home opener. I was at Penn State, West Virginia, which was sort of like a whiteout, but we'll get you to a whiteout game sometime. There's literally nothing like it.
No, I mean, I'm sure. So like, I'm interested to see once this really starts happening, seeing some stuff on Twitter or Instagram, just about, the movie theaters, see people packing out theaters to see their, you know, their teams play. I mean, apparently, you know, Steph had said that, Stephanie Weisenberger, she had mentioned that, this is a page out of the Taylor Swift playbook. So Taylor Swift, recording on tour. So obviously, you know, a lot of those, I mean, those tickets were ridiculous. A lot of people couldn't go. So people were going to movie theaters and watching. My cousin
had tickets for the Taylor Swift show in Seattle that she bought for like a couple hundred dollars pre-sale. She got them for a couple hundred. They were selling for like $5,000 the week of, and she went to the show, and I was like, yeah, this is the most ridiculous. I would have sold those tickets in a heartbeat.
No question. And even if you wanted to go like that bad, sell and then try to buy something, just make some sort of profit. That's crazy. Yeah. Yes, that's what I mean, the money is there.
I like this idea. I do like the idea. I think it is a little interesting to think about the dynamic of it. Like is the movie going to be dark? Is the theater going to be dark? You know, like, is it going to be like that's a normal movie? Cause that's the only part that seems odd to me is I'm thinking the logistics of it. Like it makes sense to have these, you know, games shown in theaters, but I mean, I imagine it should be more like a lights right. on like party almost. Just seems weird to be in a dark theater. Although maybe, I don't know, maybe that is cool. But I think it also represents a little bit of a shift toward. So I was in Tampa last year and they had the game playing outside the arena. And there's all of this stuff to do outside the arena. There's bars, there's restaurants. It's like a little district. And I know that a lot of stadiums are actually becoming smaller and they're building up the areas around them. Like, I don't know if you saw, but like Fenway, they're building up this whole area around Fenway. They're turning it into basically a family destination where you can go spend the entire day there. I think this represents a little bit more of something like that, where they're trying to make all of these areas more destinations for family. So, you can bring an entire family to a movie theater. I also expect to see more of that where they're going to broadcast, you know, outside, right outside the stadium. You see that at Wrigley all the time and those streets are absolutely mobbed. So it's pretty cool. I'll see, you know, when Penn State is in the national championship game this year, I probably won't go to the theater to watch. I'll probably watch somewhere else, but it's a cool concept.
No, for sure. But that, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I'm curious to see, like, if I'm going to be going to a theater or something and I see, yeah, like a Penn State banner and like people walking in, you know, like, am I going to be driving by theaters now? And you're going to at 12, 1 o'clock and you see people walking in with their jerseys.
I've never thought about the concept of tailgating a movie theater, but
yeah, right.
it is interesting. I guess I've had my fair share of tailgating movies when I was younger, different type of tailgating.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it worked.
I think that'd be fun. And yeah, it's another good way to, like, cause you know, we were mentioning the streaming. I think it's another way that these leagues are trying to provide a viewing experience for their fans. So, you know, they have streaming, they have in person, they have on your TV. Now they're just adding movie theaters, you know, like, I mean, there's going to be 10, 11 different ways at some point to watch a game. I'm sure VR as well. I mean, the list can go on.
Oh, that's coming too. That's coming too. Yeah.
Yeah, so I will definitely, I'm not a huge college sports fan, getting a lot more into it just because I've worked in college sports the last few years, but I kind of want to go, you know, if on Long Island here, like I see, you know, any games being played or anything, you know, I definitely want to see that. And yeah. I'm sure it's a good source of revenue for the movie theaters too.
I mean, I'm up near Syracuse, so I might have the chance to go do something like that. Maybe I'll go see a Syracuse Duke game at a movie theater.
Right. That's awesome. But yeah, that'll do it for us this week. Conduct Detrimental, at least on this episode, with Mike and John, big football episode. You know, obviously football is in full swing, and once football starts, really sports become football in America, at least. You know, that's at least the way the media works. You know, anything else? How are you feeling for this year? Any, you know what, after week one, I know it was a bad week, but any predictions for the NFL season to end off the episode?
I think that, you know who I really liked coming out of week one in the NFL? I thought the Dolphins looked really good. I thought they looked solid. I would not be surprised to see them come out of the AFC. I don't think it's out of the question. I think Tyreek Hill, he said something that I think he said he wanted to go for 2,000 yards this year. He wanted to... I mean, he's clearly on pace. He had 211 yards, so he might just get there. So I guess those are my two predictions. I think the Dolphins are going to come out of the AFC this year, and I think concurrently with that, Tyreek Hill is probably going to hit 2,000 yards.
You know what? If there's anyone to do it, it probably is him, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? What do you got? You got predictions for me?
Ooh, I do think the Lions win the North. I do. I think it's a slight one, and I think Jordan Love is going to lead the Packers to the playoffs in his first year. And you know, I think the NFC North is going to do
pretty good, right? I didn't watch that game, but
he looked real good. He had some, you know, yeah. Now some plays, you know, he's just young. You know, it's his first real start. You know, especially away from Aaron. So I think you know, really having full command of the team, it's going to be good for him, but. Yeah, I think the NFC North is going to surprise us this year. And the Vikings, as much as, you know, they're the Vikings. So, you know, I think it's going to be pretty solid. But football's back. I'm excited. And, you know, we'll be back as well. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. And this is Conduct Detrimental. We'll see you next time.